Have you ever wondered how someone you admire became successful in their professional life, but also in their personal life? What does it take to become not only an outstanding leader, but an outstanding person? Welcome to Season 2 of Leaders Unplugged, a show that explores professional and personal leadership through conversations with leaders, regardless of where they are in their career. I'm Nicole Boivin. With a career spanning more than 25 years, Tracy Pierce is an accomplished award-winning media executive. She is currently the president, distribution and pay at Bell Media. In 2016, she was honored with the Crystal Award for Outstanding Achievement in Business. Prior to Bell Media, Tracy was a partner at Goodman's. We had a great conversation covering many topics, including how to lead in an industry that, like many other industries, is experiencing tremendous disruption. Madame Tracy Pierce, President, Distribution and Pay. That sounds really important.
It does sound important, but you know that we give out awards in media easily.
You're being too modest, I'm sure. So what does a President, Distribution and Pay do?
Well, it's a multifaceted role. It breaks down into three major buckets. The first is on the distribution side, which means that my team is responsible for selling our channels to cable and satellite companies, but also direct to consumer. And that represents about half of our total revenue. We have really two primary revenue streams at Bell Media: advertising revenue and subscription revenue. And my team drives the subscription revenue piece. The second bucket is on the digital side. So all of our digital innovation and our digital build comes through another team of mine. And then, I guess I said three, but there's probably four. The third area would be corporate strategy. And then the fourth is the pay business, which of course is our DMN channel, which is our premium movie and HBO channel, as well as Crave, which is our new baby in the subscription on-demand space.
And it's an interesting time to be working in this industry right now. Like many industries, there's upheaval.
Yes.
There's disruption, there's change. So how do you navigate all that?
Well, you know, I think it's always important to remember that it's not just us. I think in media, you know, we tend to think, oh my gosh, there's, you know, incredible industrial innovation. You know, I don't know if we're on the fourth industrial revolution or where we are. But you know, I think we tend to think we're the, you know, in some respects, we're the only industry being disrupted. And it's always important to remember that, in fact, we're not, you know, sitting down with a friend in the financial services industry. And, you know, technology is having a huge, huge impact
Absolutely.
On that industry as well. That being said, that probably only achieves the misery loves company. It's we're like, okay, great, we're not the only one being completely disrupted, so what? You know, I think that this is going to sound a little bit Pollyanna-ish, but, you know, one of the things that I think does come with unbelievable industry disruption is also, you know, incredible opportunities for personal growth and for, you know, unbelievable learning. And we, I think, sometimes tend to discount, you know, how much we're learning and doing and accomplishing. So I do try to remember that.
Yes.
Because I do think that's important. On the other side of the ledger, it does make it very stressful. And one of the things that I in no way want to suggest I figured out, but one of the things that I think is important is how do you maintain your, you know, your optimism, which is so critical, and, you know, your genuine, authentic belief that you're going to come out the other side, which I do have, by the way, in media, as well as your energy around managing this incredible upheaval, but in a way that's sustainable.
Yes.
And that is something that I'm trying to figure out, because I think that historically you'd kind of have a crisis and you'd go into crisis mode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you'd pick whatever time horizon you had, but you were triaging a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we are in this period of unbelievable change, but it's not going to end, you know, 2 months or 6 months or 12 months from now. So how do we keep that, you know, pace that we need for innovation and to drive the massive change that is required in order, you know, to come out on the other side in a really great place and do it in, you know, a way that's sustainable personally and for our teams and for our business.
So I know that you indicated that you're still trying to figure what that is. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure many leaders that I've come across have said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you have figured out?
One of the things that I figured out is that I have a fantastic team.
Yeah.
And I take, you know, a small, tiny measure of credit in, you know, putting that team together. So now I need to lean into the team.
Okay.
You know, I think women tend to be a little bit more like this, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, I think for a long time in my career, I took too much on personally.
Yeah.
Really personally. And I think that there's a difference between, you know, especially with your senior leaders saying, you know, this is a tough challenge. You know, we're going to get through it, but this is tough, you know, and working on it together rather than feeling somehow you have to deliver, you know, some perfectly formed solution. And I think I probably have this wrong, but I want to say it might have been in the book, you know, How to Get to Great from Good.
Yes, yes, yes.
I got the title wrong. But essentially, you know, the theory was that a leader's job is to find the right people to put on the bus.
Yeah.
Right? And I think I agree with that, but then I need to actually, you know, lean into the people that we've got on the bus.
Yes.
I think that's really important.
Mm. And you're right. It is a theme that seems to be recurring with female leadership. The other one is around perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's perfect, it's not good enough.
Right.
And sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Progress over perfection.
Oh, completely. And especially, I think that I have learned a lot working in the digital space and working in an industry that is under such tremendous, you know, again to use the word disruption, but we don't know really what it's going to look like, you know, in 12 months. Not really. So if you don't know what it's going to look like in 12 months, perfection is not really relevant, because I don't know what perfect is. So what we're really trying to drive, you know, particularly in Randy's leadership, is a culture here that says we have to try, and we need to get comfortable with the fast fail. We really do, because we have to keep trying a whole bunch of things to hope that one of them or two of them hit, and then when, you know, the other eight don't, we have to move on. So that's you know, if you can build that culture, it, you know, perfection doesn't sit.
Doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No.
So what prepared you, if you think about your career, you've been, what, an executive for, your career spans over 25 years. What have you done to prepare for this type of role?
Well, I think you know, if we go back, I trained as a lawyer. I continue to think that that is a fantastic education.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like every education, however, particularly professional education, it tends to build certain muscles and not others. And I truly, you know, believe that that applies no matter what your,
absolutely,
you know, where you started. And so, you know, there were certain things that, there are certain things that I continue to rely on today from that education, but there are also certain things that I
need. Can you give me an example?
I think a legal education is particularly valuable in taking massive amounts of information, trying to synthesize that information and sort through what matters, and then explain and advocate. And I think that's...
So that methodology
has
served you well.
Incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
Where I think I see some lawyers, including myself, need to work as they transition into a business role, is that, you know, especially when you're a younger lawyer, you know, you feel that your job is to identify all of the risks and to explain them very thoroughly.
So is there,
I always I can always tell the PowerPoint slides that are done by the lawyers because they're incredibly dense.
Yes.
There's a lot of information, all of which is, you know, very well explained and, you know, in some respects is relevant. So I'm joking a little bit, but not totally, in that I think, you know, as an executive, you know, you got to kind of, it's not...
Balance that out because you become risk averse completely,
exactly,
and you become paralyzed,
right,
otherwise.
And you sort of need to move quickly to solution.
And there's always risk.
Right. There's always
risk. And part of the role of an executive is to mitigate some risk.
Exactly. So after I did my law degree, I did my MBA, and that was, I think, very helpful in balancing those two pieces. But in terms of what, you know, what prepared me to be here, it's like anybody. I think it's a combination of, you know, I think I had a good foundation in my education. I think I was very fortunate to have really great mentors along the way who really, you know, provided me with real feedback. Men and women that helped me grow. I think I've also always tried to, you know, engage in really lifelong learning. I think that's so important. I really do. I think, especially given the pace of change, and that, you know, some of that for me has been formal. I enjoy that. So that's, you know, that's something that
gives
me pleasure. I like going to school. I just got back from school. So, but, you know, also, like, I read, you know, really voraciously. And the other thing I try to do, which I don't do as much as I should, is to ask more questions and try not to take up as much airtime, even though that's what I'm doing here.
How was it? Because you've had, I mean, you know, you don't become president, one of the presidents of Bell Media, without having a big career that brings you there throughout the whole process as you're trying to raise children.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? Balancing home life, the office, all those demands.
You know, I think...
And a few boards thrown in there. Because that's where you and I met, on the Harborfront board.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think it's a constant feeling that I don't want to say that you're not getting it right, because that's not how I felt. But I did feel that I was always kind of trying to tweak it, you know? Like, oh, maybe a little too much this way, maybe a little too much
that. Just finding
that
balance.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is that balance. But I, you know, what I've come to realize about myself is that trying to achieve that balance, you know, thinking that I, by and large, you know, I think got it right for me and my and my kids most of the time gives me tremendous satisfaction. And I also 100% believe for myself that I am a much happier mother, and therefore I would say a better mother when I'm working. You know, no, I really do. You know, I was at home with my kids for 3 years. I was working as a consultant, but yes. Really, you know, that was pretty low key.
Is that when you went to
lived in England?
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, I found that, you know, first of all, I focused way too much on my children. You know, at one point I said to my son, like, you're the worst employee I've ever had. Like, jokingly, right? Because he's like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, no one will do what I'm asking them to do, you know? And it's like, because we're not employees. Okay, well, that's fair too. But also, you know, I just, when I go home, I'm so happy to see my kids. I really am. And it's, of course, there are days when you're like, oh my God, you're like, seriously, the project's due tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you didn't think.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not suggesting it's all rainbows and unicorns, but I really, you know, that change in gears is what helps me leave the office behind.
Is it grounding? Is that what it is?
It's grounding. It's also just, you know, you can't go home and worry about the office for, you know, the next 8 hours when
you have to be present with your family.
Yeah. And I think that imperative was very helpful for me as a person to, you know, leave the work piece.
Yeah.
Focus on something else and then, you know, come back to that.
Yeah. So, Tracy, what's the hardest thing you've ever had to do?
Yeah, I saw that question on the list.
I can tell you're thrilled.
Well, look, I mean, the hardest things I've ever had to do are in my personal life, not in my professional life. I mean, and frankly, I think if you don't answer the question that way, that then you need to really think about whether you're living your fullest personal life, you know. But I would answer the question from a professional perspective in probably in two parts. One is, you know, making decisions to let people go and letting people go is, you know, very, very difficult. But I also think that, you know, I've grown as a leader in taking that on and in trying to say, you know, how would I want to be treated? You know, my objective as much as possible is to never have somebody, you know, surprised by that conversation, and to be empathetic and authentic and to own it. You know, I know some people outsource that to their HR department, and I don't agree with that.
No.
So that's always difficult. I think the other piece is to really seek out feedback and then to use it effectively. And by that, you know, I mean not just focusing on the negative. And by the way, I'm not good at that. I am still learning, you know. And because I tend to focus on the negative, I don't really want to ask for feedback. And but I, you know, I'm doing it and I'm committed to doing it. And so I would say, you know, learning to incorporate feedback in the right way, neither over-indexing on the negative or the positive, you know, Somebody said to me, listen, it's just feedback. You don't have to do anything with it if you don't want to.
Yes.
So, but I, you know, once I kind of, you know, got over, you know, all of the angst that I think probably every human being has about feedback, you do realize how incredibly valuable it is.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because, you know, there will always be something in the feedback.
Yes.
But I would say, as importantly, the process, if you really, you know, sit with it, the process you'll go through in sifting through the feedback,
mm-hmm.
and in sort of saying, oh, you know, I can see why they said that, but actually, you know, where I think that's coming from is this.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? That's that. What manifested itself was a symptom, not a cause.
Uh-huh.
So I would say those two things, and also learning to, you know, to deliver feedback tailored to your team member, so that so that it will be hopefully taken on board and used in the most effective way.
Do you think women react differently to feedback than men?
I think, you know, as a general proposition.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Do we tend to personalize more?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And I think there's all kinds of reasons for that, you know. All sorts of reasons. I think, you know, and I would excuse me, even as I look at, you know, my children, you know, with whom I'm, you know, very close. But, you know, I learned around, you know, when my son was maybe, I don't know, 8 or 9, I remember having this conversation, and I thought, oh, that was a kind of a sharp conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, from both sides.
Yeah.
I really stewed about this, and I thought, oh, you know, I need to circle back on this. So then, you know, the next morning I said, Cole, you know, I just want to, you know, I wasn't really, I didn't feel good about how that ended. And he's like, what ended? Like, he had no idea. He did not color the conversation. He moved on. That was a million years ago. So, I mean, I'm overstating it, but.
Yes.
I found it so, you know, he was like, yeah, that was like, yeah, you know, like you, I didn't agree with you. You didn't agree with me. Now I've moved. Like that is so far in the rearview mirror,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
mm-hmm.
whereas I think we're just like, oh,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of that.
Yeah. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
What would I tell my 18-year-old self? I would tell my 18-year-old self that. Vulnerability is not weakness.
I like that, Tracy. That's a good one.
I would say...
Tell me more about that.
I think that, you know, I think that in order to be successful... I felt that I needed this sort of...
Armor?
Yeah, this. I was going to say this sort of veneer.
Yes.
You know, this. It's all good all the time. And I think that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some respects it's kind of off-putting because I don't really like people like that. Fortunately,
it didn't last very long because you're shown on that.
Exactly. Fortunately, I was not successful at crafting the veneer, so that's good, I guess. No, but I think I think that especially as you progress in your career and, you know, talking about balance, you know, it's not, you know, I know this is sort of the approach du jour, but, you know, sort of the notion that it's not about work-life balance, it's about work-life integration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know that the words make a difference, except that to me they did, in the sense that I think that, you know, the thinking about work doesn't stop at work, and the thinking about your kids or your personal life doesn't stop, you know, when you come to work. So we're all trying to figure out how am I a whole person? And so finding ways to be, you know, authentic and consistent, I think, makes you a better leader, a more credible leader, and a happier person, because you're not sort of shifting gears. And I'm not suggesting that means you come and, you know, lay all of your personal problems out on, you know, on your staff. But I'm saying that, you know, we are all whole people. We have good days, we have bad days, we have rough patches in life and easier patches in life, whether those be personal or professional. Mm-hmm. And so I would certainly say that to my 18-year-old self. I would say, you know, I would say to her, you got this, you know, and that you're going to have a great ride.
What advice would you give young female leaders who are trying to figure it out?
So let me come at it a little bit, you know, almost from the negative, which is not my usual way. But one of the things that I found intensely frustrating when I was starting out was when people would say, follow your passion. Just do what makes you happy. I didn't have a clue what my passion was. You know, I mean, I you know, there were things I enjoyed, but, you know, I wasn't even really sure what I was good at. I, you know, I kind of popped out of school and, you know, ended up at a law firm, which makes sense after you go to law school. But you know, so I think that advice for many people is not super helpful, because I don't think they know. So what I would say is start.
Just do something?
Just start. Start and work really hard when you're young. Work really hard when you're young. Take on, you know, whatever's offered to you, and then start processing. But be vigilant, right? If you don't like it, you know, not right away, because you got to do some stuff you don't like. Let's understand that. But, you know, if you sort of say, hey, I'm doing this, and the person who, you know, did this 5 years on, when I look at their job, I don't like that job. If you see that, then you need to change gears and figure out another thing and, you know, go look at that. If you say, oh, I really like what they're doing 5 years on, or, you know, 10 years on, then you know, in my view, you put your head down and you work really hard, mm-hmm. because you're saying, I'm going to invest now and I'm going to, you know, end mm-hmm. up there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's start, be really aware of what's giving you, you know, pleasure, what's making you feel, you know, competent and capable, where your strengths are, and just keep evaluating that as you go along. And don't be afraid to, you know, to change. Like, have faith in yourself. Bet on yourself. Bet on yourself. Because, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed, when I started out, being in private practice. But then as I went along, I started to realize that, you know, what was giving me the most pleasure was, you know, building and growing things. And I was, you know, in a litigation mm-hmm. / advocacy role.
Yeah.
You know, I jokingly say this, but it's sort of true. The best case scenario for your clients, if you're a litigation lawyer, is they never see you again, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I realized, oh, you know, I think I want to be in more of a business role, and, mm-hmm. you know, what would that look like? And so I think be courageous, you know, make changes, bet on yourself, believe in yourself, but don't feel that you have to have it all figured out. I don't have it all figured out now. You know, I'm sort of like, okay, what do I think are the options mm-hmm. that I'm looking at for the next, you know, 5-year plan? Mm-hmm. And then I'll land on something and I'll start heading towards that direction.
Yeah. I think this is a great way to finish this conversation, as much as I hate to do so. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I absolutely love Tracy's answer to my question on what she would tell her 18-year-old self around the fact that vulnerability is not a weakness. We often think that we need to have our armor on when it comes to work. I would suggest that if that is the case, you're either not in the right role or the right work environment.
I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. And if you want to listen to more conversations like this one, look for Leaders Unplugged at iTunes or Google Play. I also want to thank our producer, Josie Guimond, and our editor, Graham Harris. Until next time.